Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, we are solo podcasting again. I keep hearing such wonderful, validating, encouraging feedback on the solo podcast. So I continue to expand my comfort zone into loving doing them. And deciding that speaking into a small green light at the top of a pixelated screen is super fun and easy for me to pull off. So yay, thank you for holding space for my continuing solo podcasting mastery. I don't know that there's an order. As usual, the quantum languaging stuff, the language of betterarchy stuff is gonna come at the end of the show. I put out this Osho quote, I don't even remember what it was. You know what? Let me pause. Let me pull it up for us. Let's be thorough here. For years on Instagram, I have been posting quotes in addition to posting my own things, because that's just how I do it. And I had posted this Osho quote, "The biggest fear in the world is this opinion of others. And the moment you are not afraid of the crowd, you are no longer a sheep, you become a lion." Right? And what I'm always doing is just sharing value with my tribe and sharing the stuff that lights me up, that gives me inspiration, that I'm learning from, and trusting that if people are tracking what I'm doing, they're gonna receive value from that as well. So I posted that quote and I received a message on the back end from someone saying, "You know, Osho abused women and was a drug addict and you really shouldn't be posting his quotes anymore." And it was like, oh, that's adorable. You're coming in to tell me what I, quote, should and should not share? Are you new? Have you met me? Like, what the fuck? And I want to talk about the Osho takedown. Actually, Emily and I have been talking about this for quite a while, but it wasn't really in her wheelhouse, but it was something that I'd wanted for us to unpack on Words Podcast. So let's break it down. Osho was an enlightened spiritual teacher born and raised in India. He was known as Rajneesh. He was based, I believe his ashram was based in Pune. I've been to India a couple times, but I did not feel any authentic inspiration to go there. From what I've heard, a lot of it is about a more kind of like free sexual kind of relating. It's not really up my alley. I'm sure there's more to it than that. But I've been a fan of Osho and his books and his message and his teachings for several decades. Like, I love Osho. His words speak to me on such a deep level. And for anyone who's tracking me and my work, I'm guessing you have something similar where capital T truth just has its own flavor and we can feel it in our bones. And I personally, as I'm guessing you are as well, I'm very attracted to capital T truth when I hear it coming. Now, I started practicing yoga, I would say in the mid 90s in Los Angeles, which was a pretty interesting time to start practicing yoga because, you know, as yoga moved from India to the West, and it's really the West, like yoga in India is nothing like yoga in the West. Like, it's the West that really unpacked it, sure, commodified it, but also like has applied it in lots of different and cool ways. I don't have any judgment on people who go to some hot yoga class to keep themselves in shape. Like, that's still only a good thing. Is it an eightfold path of union wherein we're like dialing in right speech, right action, like all of that? No, but like, that's okay. That's okay. Like, I personally don't have an issue with that. I'm not a purist in that way. But when I was an Ashtanga yogi, like, yeah, I had some attitude around the physical practice. And I think that's kind of baked into Ashtanga yoga, right? But that's neither here nor there. But when I was practicing yoga in the early 90s in Los Angeles, I never made the mistake of conflating the benefits I was getting from my practice or even the teachings that were coming through whoever was teaching if I was taking a hatha class, right? In Ashtanga yoga, there's no talking. There's no like teacher kind of stepping into a guru-like role, disseminating like a Dharma talk upon their students. That doesn't happen in Ashtanga yoga, but I love those classes. And like back in the day, I was taking classes from Sol Ray, Govindas, who at that time was called Ira. And I love the truth they were speaking, but I never made the mistake of conflating the truth that was moving through them with them as teachers and putting them on a pedestal, right? As you guys likely know, as you're tracking my work, like I'm not into hierarchy. It's something I've never understood. It's not like something I internalized and then needed to like unprogram myself from and deconstruct for myself. I never had it. I came into this realm like not understanding hierarchy, which is why I got in trouble in school because I would tell the teachers when they were wrong. I would tell the teachers when something was unfair. And I never understood, like, you can't say that because you're 8 or you're a student. I was like, so? And it was what got me fired from pretty much every job I ever had because if I saw that something could be done better, I would just say it or do it, even though it wasn't like my role. So that's something that I came in with. And I actually only realized I was already writing the language of betterarchy at the time. But it wasn't until I was on Rama Business School, right? Guru Jagat's Kundalini Yoga School. I was invited to participate as a teacher in Rama Business School. I think it was either 2020 or 2021, and it was like a Zoom thing. And that was a pretty, like, Rama Business School was, I mean, Rama, when Guru Jagat was running it, was tits from my perspective. And it was really cool in my community. I thought what Guru Jagat was doing was freaking amazing. And I thought she was like this amazing living model of a no limits lifestyle. And like, how much fun could someone have? And how abundant could someone be? And like, how many ways could they express, right? And everyone has their criticisms of the Kundalini community, which is actually what I'm about to be talking about. It is what we're talking about. I'm just taking the side road into it. But for all the critiques and criticisms of the Kundalini yoga community, which I've been on the periphery of since the early 90s, Kundalini yogis are abundant, very dignified and self-respecting, and have an incredible mastery over their nervous systems and seem to be really successful in life. So this is where we're going with the Osho conversation in terms of conflating the message with the messenger and using that as a way to like take down a whole community and demoralize a community, which is what I saw happening with Osho by way of Wild Wild Country. So Osho has been, I mean, I have didn't meet him in this lifetime, but his books have had a profound effect on me, as have a lot of his lectures. So I've always been a fan. And then they came out with this movie, Wild Wild Country, around, I could look it up, but do we really care? 2018, 2019? And this was the movie that inspired the private message that I got telling me that I shouldn't be posting quotes from Osho. Because according to cancel culture, low vibe, divisive, disgusting, anti-human and anti-life cancel culture, when people don't act in accordance with our delusional projections, wherein we decide that their humanity cannot exist and is something worthy of no tolerance or respect because we think they should be perfect. And when that doesn't line up, we're supposed to destroy their body of work and remove our attention from it, right? Like Michael Jackson, right? I remember seeing an episode of High Fidelity when they redid the movie as a television show with Zoe Kravitz. And there's an episode or a moment in an episode where there's all this hullabaloo in the record store over whether or not someone is allowed to buy a Michael Jackson record because of the allegations made against him after he was dead. And notice this is a through line, how so much of this particular flavor of cancel culture only comes in after the people who are being accused of wrongdoing are dead and cannot speak up for themselves. So, like, we're not supposed to listen to Michael Jackson anymore. Like, we're not supposed to listen to the Jackson 5 anymore. No one had a problem with Roman Polanski, right? Like, did they cancel Rosemary's Baby? No, it's just like this modern day infection that unfortunately seeped its way into the yoga community. So here's what I know about Wild Wild Country, because I did watch the whole thing. I think it was multiple episodes. It's Time I Will Never Get Back. It was so salacious, right? So first of all, it was produced by these demonic, satanic scumbags. And I feel completely confident in saying that because of my experiences with them. And so what I noticed about Wild Wild Country was they only focused on the salacious grossness happening in the community in Oregon. There was absolutely zero time or effort that went into Osho's teachings, what had people attracted to Osho's message. There was also nothing in there in talking about the wrongdoings of his female henchmen. There was nothing in there that went into, well, did Osho know about what she was doing and how she was running the community and how she was engaging with the town itself? Not all of that was left out. And they had multiple episodes. You know what? Screw it. Let's look up when it came out, just so I do want to know how many episodes it was. So hang on. Let me pause us and I'll pull it up. Okay, it just got grosser because I looked it up and I saw that it won an Emmy, right? So if there's any confusion over, you know, if there's any integrity left in any of these propaganda arms of the octopus of global control, I think the answer is an obvious no if that piece of garbage won itself an Emmy. So it was six episodes, and in six episodes of salacious, it's only focused on like the sex and the drugs and the bad behavior, right? Which is pretty much par for the course in 2024, because demoralization is one of the primary tools of the lizards in charge and is one of the primary markers of ideological subversion, which I seem to be mentioning it in every episode. Is the takedown from within that we are currently being tasked with standing against and staving off. And I'm really excited for all of us to be doing our part by using our voices and saying no more consistently, and even in mixed company, even if it renders us unpopular, because the desire to stay liked and popular is doing all of us a huge disservice. And I'm gonna make a plea to anyone listening with kids, with your own children, the stakes are really high. What kind of world do you want to leave to your children? Do you want them to be given a slave world marked by techno-fascism, a complete surveillance state, and total tyranny? Or do you want to give them freedom? And maybe by feeling into that question, it will inspire you to use your voice to say no, even in instances wherein it might not help you win the popularity contest. And for those of you who are speaking your voice, thank you, deep bow, very grateful for your service to humanity. So this atrocious six episode show, in six episodes, they didn't seem to carve out even 5 minutes to talk about the truth that Osho spoke, the crux of his teachings, or even go into whether he knew what was going on in the community or not. It only pushed, like good propagandists, all the salacious nonsense. And that encouraged a lot of non-critically thinking people who just like to follow and be told what to think to cancel Osho, right? And to relinquish any allegiance or even openness to his teachings. Now, look, if you don't jive with Osho or Osho's teachings, that's fine, respect. But what I'm pointing out is that it's twofold. One, we've got an issue with people putting gurus on pedestals and then getting butt hurt when they see that the gurus don't really belong on pedestals and they come crashing down. And then because those people aren't exercising the self-responsibility to go within and say, well, why am I putting these people on pedestals? And why am I thinking that because someone speaks truth, they have no shadows anymore, right? That's cuckoo pants. And we'll come back to that. But the other piece that I want to point out is that this was a coordinated takedown of all of the spiritual teachers at the same time. Not all, I'm exaggerating, but they took down Osho at the exact same time that they took down Sri K. Patabi Joyce, who was my teacher, who gave us Ashtanga Yoga. And it was also the same time they took down Yogi Bhajan, who's the man who brought Kundalini Yoga to the West. Don't you find it fascinating that all three of those men had their reputations destroyed and were quote unquote canceled at the exact same time? And how none of them were alive to defend themselves. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's a pretty convenient time to create divisiveness in these communities, to leave people, the people who fell for the bait, kind of floating in the atmosphere without, you know, that spiritual rooting that perhaps they were getting from Kundalini, from Ashtanga, from Osho's teachings. To me, that seems fully, fully coordinated. And I'm going to pause for a sip. I never met Yogi Bhajan myself, but I did meet Sri K. Patabi Joyce. I studied with him in India in 99, in 2000, and then multiple times when he came back through the States. A couple things. So when I was in India with Sri K. Patabi Joyce, I had heard that he was in the that sometimes he would grab women between the legs. It didn't happen to me. And I practiced with him, like he loved me. He was really into my practice because I was a gymnast. So when I got to Mysore in 1999, I was given like an early morning slot and there was a hierarchy there. And I was given a lot of his attention, right? So I practiced really hands-on with Patabi Joyce. That never happened to me. But what I will say, practicing yoga as much as I did in Los Angeles, is that it was really rare if teachers didn't cross the line. Not because these teachers are scumbags, certainly not because I was asking for it, but because that's the masculine feminine. Does that make it okay? No, but that's the reality. We're all in a room wearing extremely tight clothes. And we've talked about this before. If you want to know my stance on, you know, yoga legging camel toes and how women choose to present themselves, go check it out in, you know, the solo podcast I've done in the past few weeks. I believe the one that you want to check out would be called Apple Store Strippers. But regardless, it doesn't even matter. You know, we're in these rooms. Yoga has a sensual quality. We're all drenched in sweat. Male teachers are teaching a room full of female students who it's just baked into it, right? That hierarchy is baked into that physical setup where you have anywhere from what, 5 to 100 people in a room giving their attention to a single teacher, generally male, especially, I mean, I've only had lines crossed with male teachers. And again, this is in no way, shape, or form to denigrate men. It's to talk about the reality of living in this realm. So in that instance, I've had a number of male teachers cross the line with me. And every time it happens, it's like, okay, what's the lesson? How am I going to handle this? Like, this is a reality of this world. It's not a safe planet. You know, I live with tons of like bunny rabbits. Those bunny rabbits are in danger of being chopped, you know, swooped up by hawks, chewed up by coyotes. That's the reality. The coyote's not bad. The bunny's not a victim. This is nature, right? I think probably one of the reasons that Sri K. Patabi Joyce didn't grab my crotch is because we weren't an energetic match for whatever lessons were embedded in that dynamic. So that didn't happen with me, but we all knew that that was going on. He wasn't raping anyone, but that's what was happening. In the same way that like most yoga rooms I was in, the men would cross the line. It didn't make it a deal breaker. It didn't, like, it never crossed my mind to publicly expose them, to destroy their careers, or even to not come back. What happened was, like, there needed to be a conversation. I needed to let them know that that was not okay and readjust our dynamic. Like, what I really don't like about the way the whole Me Too thing has framed this dance between men and women, which will always, always, always be there, is it frames women as infantilized victims who don't have the wherewithal to have our own backs. And every time a man has crossed the line with me, it's a lesson in using my voice, speaking my truth, putting up a boundary, standing in my agency and in my power, and letting them know that that's not okay. But it doesn't have to be like a stage 12 meltdown, call the local papers, a dude crossed the line. It's like, yeah, that's called life on earth. And the best way for us to handle it, instead of shaming men, blaming men, canceling men, destroying men's reputations, is to use our voices and negotiate different relationship boundaries. Like, it's so obvious. It's such an Occam's razor. I've learned this a number of different ways. Every woman alive has had these experiences. And it's like, okay, are you going to victimize yourself to it and create stories wherein you're the 1000% victim, men are terrible, and create this big, like, separate the dissonance between us? Or where can we take the lessons, look at, like, okay, where have I contributed to this? Where have I perhaps offered some mixed messages? And maybe there aren't any times. Like, maybe there are no mixed messages. But, like, why don't we handle these things like adults instead of the current way, which isn't even a way. It's just, like, it's a divide and conquer, destroy humanity social engineering technique that bugs me how many women are, like, lapping it up hook, line, and sinker. But so the same thing happened to Yogi Bhajan in the Kundalini yoga community. And look, I had already stepped away from the Ashtanga yoga community when they went after Sri K. Patabi Joyce. Of course, they all waited till he was dead to do it, which is super cowardly. Like, we all knew it the whole time, right? But it's like, he wasn't like putting his hand down women's pants. I've noticed this in my life. Anytime I've engaged a healer or a yoga teacher from an Asian culture, a more repressed culture, where, because I'm so open, born and raised in California, being wired the way I'm wired, it's more likely that they're gonna cross the line because they're not used to people being as open as I am. And that's fine. Then I just let them know, no, that's not what I meant. No, that's not okay. No, that's not what's going on here. And we move on. It's not really that big of a deal. But what I saw in the Kundalini community is how it completely fractured and fragmented that whole community. And so many people who I knew were like, oh, I'll never practice Kundalini yoga again. And it's like, well, that's fucking stupid. Why? Because the guy who brought it here wasn't enlightened perfection in a way that is also, and I realize how many times I've used the term delusional. Let's do this. Remember Pee-wee's Playhouse? When there was, like, a word of the day, and whenever we'd hear that word, we'd go, ah, and, like, have a big celebration. So we're going to do that today with delusion or delusional, because I hear myself using it so much. I don't know if this was, like, a deliberate psyop that came through the whole, like, new age operation, or if something got conflated along the way, but that I don't know why people think that, like, to be spiritual or to be enlightened means that we no longer have shadows, we no longer are human. 'Cause that's ridiculous. Like, we all have shadows. We all have our shit. In my mind, being enlightened is just, like, expanding our capacity, not only to hold the truth of that, but to be in balance with it, but also to be responsible with it and to be aware, to take responsibility when we leak our shadows. I don't know that people who are truly enlightened don't leak shadows anymore, probably way less, But it's insane to think that they don't exist. So I thought it was like the biggest joke for me in seeing the yoga community cancel their teachers and cancel the people who didn't cancel their teachers, because that's how cuckoo pants it's gotten, is that yoga means union. That's what the word actually means. It doesn't mean flexible. It doesn't mean scorpion pose. It means union. So it's like, wow, how counter to the entire ethos of yoga is it to watch these communities eat themselves and eat their own and destroy themselves because of the propaganda being pushed by the social engineers who want to destroy these communities wherein we can take solace, support one another, grow and expand our own awareness, our own spirituality, all of the things that come through these practices. Like, it's so lame, guys. So I just find it so odd to see these communities not just taking the bait, but like just violating the entire ethos of yoga by this backbiting. I mean, when the whole pandemic happened, and I was speaking out, and before and after the Plandemic documentary, it was amazing to me how many of my former yoga teachers, legit teachers, were attacking me. Like, okay, we don't agree, but do you know the meaning of the word that you self-identify with as a teacher? Like, ugh. So I saw so many Kundalini yogis after stuff came out about Yogi Bhajan, which again, we've all been hearing for decades. Like, this was no shock, right? I think it's baked in. You put someone on a pedestal, especially a man, I think the man is gonna push the boundaries of that pedestal. Not because men are bad, not because men are scumbags. I think that's just embedded in pedestaling. Same with women. Put women on a pedestal, you're gonna see a woman abuse that power imbalance, which is another reason why we are wise to move out of hierarchy and into betterarchy, because it's just the shape. It's the shape of hierarchy lends itself to these types of abuses of power because no one should be put on a goddamn pedestal. Great, you have beautiful wisdom to speak. Speak it from here, from the same level as the people who are embracing your messages. Like, it's so clear to me. But after they took down Yogi Bhajan, again, after he passed, cowards, can't defend himself, I saw so many people like, I'm never practicing Kundalini yoga again. I want nothing to do with this. And it's like, well, that's stupid because the teachings are awesome. Like, why would you do that to yourself? Who invented the wheel? Did the guy who invented the wheel, did he never cross the line with women? Did he never make an off-color joke? And if he did, are we all gonna just cease to use wheels? That's how stupid it is. And going back to, as I said, like, don't mix the message with the messenger. It's only hurting ourselves, Like, these people brought us valuable tools, so just because they don't match up to our idealized hierarchical projections, we're going to throw the messages away, our own relationship to our own spiritual evolution be damned. That's what they want us to do. That's what the lizards who are trying to destroy the human experiment want us to do. And it's so frustrating to see so many people taking the bait and not noticing, like, oh, we all think it's a coincidence that Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce, Yogi Bhajan, and Osho were all taken down in this gross, low vibe, public Me Too way at the exact same time, and everyone's just gonna fall for it. And what's going on right now in terms of the techno-fascist takeover, we can call it whatever we want. I know you're listening to my show, you know what we're talking about. Notice how much atheism plays into it, right? They had to take the idea of a God or a source or a spirituality away from people so that they would then give their allegiance to the cult of scientism, to the cult of rule following, right? None of that would be effective if people had their own connection with source, right? And when I say connection with source, I don't mean a priest or a rabbi acting as gatekeeper, acting as translator, telling people how to practice their spirituality. I'm talking about a real, personalized, uniquely individual connection to source. That had to be taken out for them to pull off what they're doing and shove people into the cult of scientism, alphabet, you know, victim. Like, all of those cults would not have any adherence if those, the people who have become those adherents, had their own authentic connection to source, let alone their own authentic connection to their own authority and agency. So I see that as a deliberate attack in this larger World War III, which is already in play, has already been in play. I know some people say it started with pandemic. Some people say, of course, 9/11 seeded it, and 9/11 was probably the first hit, the first like attack. But I see Me Too and Black Lives Matter, that, so Black Lives Matter was what, 2013? Me Too, I'm not gonna look it up, but I see those as like, that's when it started, right? Because that's when the culture wars started, and that's really the foundation for the division that's allowing them to now move into the other, you know, whether it was the pandemic, or next will be the climate fraud or the alien invasion. Like, none of those would be successful if we were a unified human fabric. So I see Me Too, I mean, Black Lives Matter started in 2012, but it wasn't until George Floyd that they really made way more headway with it. I mean, we could also look at Obama and them just installing Obama, right? All of these, we'll just call these like different battles, different strikes. But this is the function that I see the whole Me Too sham supporting in the giant like divide and conquer. And, you know, I gotta give the social engineers props for, like, they're freaking brilliant, right? They're obviously working with a different understanding of time, but how their ops are functioning on so many different levels. I respect the intelligence and the layers that go into their plans. I one time got really curious about Bain and Company. That's the organization that like is kind of carrying out the Black Lives Matter op and the Alphabet op. Like, they're the ones who, it's like, okay, so say it's birthed at Tavistock or it's birthed at Santa Fe Institute. Then they need an actual marketing company to come up with like the marketing schematics of like, okay, so then we're going to, you know, pull the George Floyd false flag. And then, you know, a week later we'll roll out the like black square, Black Lives Matter. Like, so it's Bain and Company who was doing that one. And I kind of got a bug up my ass around the George Floyd time where I was like, I kind of want to meet these guys. Like, they're diabolical psychopaths to be sure, but I'm so fascinated by how intelligently they roll out these campaigns. And I went onto their website, and the feeling of evil that was coming, radiating through the screen just on their homepage, I could not navigate away fast enough. I was like, no, we're not, I'm not reaching out to Bain and Company about this. It's way too scary. But I just wanted to speak to that about the coordinated takedown of these spiritual teachers, this, you know, this low vibe, posthumous cancel culture, and also these unrealistic expectations we put on those who we put them on pedestals, right? Or we abide by the pedestals that culture puts them on. There's like, in that structure, we're always going to see these abuses of power, even like with women, you know? I used to have a friend before the world went crazy, and now we're not allowed to be friends because we don't vote the same. But she was president of Women in Film, and she told me about multiple complaints against Oprah for groping women. without consent, right? Think of all the complaints we hear about Kamala, right? And how she treats people, or Hillary Clinton, or Ellen DeGeneres, or, right? It's not that like men are fundamentally bad or women are fundamentally bad. It's that hierarchy fundamentally perverts human relationships, creates these gross power imbalances. And it is the very rare human that I've seen who can live on a pedestal and not abuse that power. And I'm talking about spiritual teachers, authors, shamans, mystics, healers. Like, it is so rampant. And it's not because these people are fundamentally broken. It's because hierarchy is fundamentally broken and is fundamentally lame. And it's time for us to evolve out of it. Instead of expecting people, you know, it's like famous people. Like, for anyone who knows people who are famous or became famous, they get weird. They just get weird. There's no getting around it. And how could they not, right? It's such a big ass to, you know, to put these people on these pedestals, to give them all this adoration, all this money, all this publicity, and expect them to remain like sane and grounded and humble. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's pretty freaking rare. So instead of attacking men, and instead of attacking these spiritual teachers, how about we just evolve our culture out of hierarchy and watch this stuff straighten itself out of its own accord? I didn't think that was gonna take that long, but I'm okay with it. Pause for a sip. Someone said to me, well, actually I've heard this a lot, I'd say in the past 20 years of my life. Oh, you were a dancer? Anytime I mention dancing, people say, oh, you were a dancer? And I'm like, why is that past tense? Like, what does that even mean? Like, once a dancer, always a dancer. It's like being a writer. I know there are people who like to write. I really don't relate. I feel like being a writer is a curse. Being a writer is you're born a writer and you can't not write, right? That's my definition. I'm sure there are writers who love to write. This is just my perspective. Same with a dancer. You're born a dancer, right? You're born embodied and your body needs to move a certain way. It's not a was thing. So I just want to draw our attention to that, which is, I was going to say it's soft ageism, but it's probably not so soft. Thinking that like, oh, because what? I'm not like in a Broadway chorus line, that I'm not a dancer anymore. Like it's so lame, especially considering like, How many professional dancing gigs I got even when I was at the stage when people were like, oh, you were a dancer past tense. Like, no, I am a dancer and I always will be a dancer. And whatever blocks you have in your brain because of programming around the lie of linear time, thank you for not projecting them onto the rest of us. Okay, what's next? Oh, so I mentioned this briefly on the last Word Salad with Emily, but you know, for anyone who watches, tunes into that show, will know that for years, Emily and I have been deconstructing and essentially doing our best to take down the intellectual dark web. Not because, I mean, we have so many mixed feelings about it. I'll just speak for myself. I have so many mixed feelings about it because I don't like being destructive and I don't like focusing my energy oppositionally or taking stuff down. And as a journalist, like, truth and justice at all costs. And right now what we're dealing with is such a gross, you know, attempt to take down America. I feel like it's important to get things in the public record, and it is important to keep speaking out against tyranny, even though I don't think speaking out against is in and of itself a very effective mode of operating. But as I've said, and it's not my preference, but like, let's not sugarcoat it. We are in a war of information right now. And so given how loud the mechanisms are that are broadcasting propaganda and manipulation and lies, I have felt, I'm still reviewing where I'm at with it now, but I have felt an obligation to counter the lies and the propaganda with actual truth. And so that has led to us speaking out a lot against the intellectual dark web. And so I was watching this interview with Brett Weinstein and Chris Martinson. They're both scientists, right? Brett's an evolutionary biologist, Chris is a toxicologist. And they were speaking out about the media coverage of Trump's attempted assassination, and they were deconstructing the lies and the propaganda. And I was looking at it and I'm like, okay, neither of these men have any formal education in journalism or information dissemination. But as scientists, one of evolutionary biology, one of toxicology, they have conflated the specialization, the specialized focus that they have applied in their own designated areas. And they've conflated that with a sort of intellectual superiority or an expert status conferred upon so-called scientists that they feel, or culture is propping up the fiction that gives them expertise in information dissemination. And this has been an ongoing source of frustration for me, which I'm sure you guys have heard me talk about several times throughout the years, of like, why is an actual journalist, is no expertise conferred upon me when I'm speaking about false information shared, fake news, propaganda, media manipulation, et cetera, et cetera. And what I realize is it's just a function of language. Because the word science and scientist has been completely weaponized. And this goes way back, guys. If you have not yet tuned in to the Hidden Life is Best podcast, which is all about the Francis Bacon Shakespeare scam, run, don't walk. Sign up for that Patreon, Robert Frederick's Patreon, and take that in. I believe it's only airs on Spotify. Plus there's his own Patreon. But he talks about how the cult of scientism was born through the Francis Bacon Shakespeare project, which was itself a giant social engineering scam. But I was thinking, so I've been schooled and spent a career focused on information dissemination, but because that's not considered a science, right, then I don't get any expertise points. And but because Robert Malone is a doctor of what, virology, vaccines, something, that supposedly gives him license to tell the world about propaganda, even though he has no expertise in that realm whatsoever. And I've noticed this in terms of like, and I talked about this on the last solo podcast, how a big part of the SFI scam is to continue to run the illusion of intellectual superiority, continue to push that narrative because some people are scientists or have degrees in science. So let's take the example of, say, an Eric Weinstein, who, and I think he really believes it, believes that he's smarter than everyone else on planet Earth. He and Brett, brothers, they do the same thing, where they will talk about their specialized study and experience and conflate that with an overarching intellectual superiority that absolutely does not exist. All it means to be a scientist or a doctor is that someone has focused a lot of energy in learning and in you know, experiencing a very narrow field of study, be it biology, be it psychology, be it nuclear physics, right? It does not translate to intellectual superiority. It translates to these people have a lot of knowledge in one specific area, maybe two specific areas, right? But that knowledge, in the case of all of these scientists and doctors, absolutely does not cross over into journalism, propaganda, or information sharing. And if we had called, like, Hunter Thompson called himself a doctor of journalism. I'm now adopting this. I'm interested to see how this changes, because for the past, it's not even 4 years, guys. I would say for the past 24 years, when I'm speaking to friends, mixed company, whatnot, about what I've learned about what's going on in the world from my research, I'm given no I don't want to say greater credence, like it's hierarchical, but it kind of is. There's no credence given to my perspective based on the fact that, like, I am a journalist. I do not only know how to do research and follow the money, but I actually do that in formulating my opinions because of the languaging around it, because it's not considered a science, because I'm not a doctor. My perspectives are just tossed aside like any, you know, proverbial Tom, Dick, or Harry. Granted, there's my own stuff tied up in this. I'm aware of it. Like, why do I want the validation? Why do I want the recognition? Where can I give that to myself? I've got that. Let's just put that aside. I'm talking about in the grand scheme of, like, we're supposed to listen to the scientists, whether they deserve to be listened to or not. And in most cases, I would say not. That hasn't yet been applied to journalism. So what I'm proposing are the following shifts. I'm now a doctor of journalism. I'm no longer a journalist. Well, I am also a journalist, but I'm also a doctor of journalism. And I'm going to start leading with that to see how that shifts, if it does. And I also want to call journalism information dissemination science. I am at this point making it an actual science, and I'm claiming to be a scientist because that's where I've had focused, intensified, narrow, you know, realm of study. And I'm wondering, were we to just shift that tiny bit of languaging around it, if those of us, you know, the people who are cast aside as conspiracy theorists as well, like, please start calling yourself an information dissemination scientist. I want to see how that shifts. And if maybe those who are still asleep at the wheels, if that might jostle them into, you know, maybe that'll jostle their own mind control into starting to listen to what we have to share. Because I know you guys know how freaking frustrating it is with how much time and effort we put into our research. And our friends and family who don't get it, just toss it aside, will parrot one of their pundits and think we're having like a totally equally matched conversation. Ugh, so annoying. So I am lobbying for these languaging shifts, and I would love for you guys to let me know your experience with them and how your knowledge and your research is received when it's couched with these phrases. And I'm going to pause because we're still having the climate control issues. Stand by. Thank you for your patience. We're back. All right. So next, let's start diving into the languaging. I have a couple of three small pieces. So one was, I have a friend. I'm trying to think, let's give this from a pseudonym to respect his anonymity. We'll call him Fred. Fred is conducting an orchestra for a very special event. And he was telling me about the issue he was having with the drummer, who for whatever reason can't seem to keep a beat or keep the same tempo, and it's messing up the entire orchestra. And he was telling me about his attempts to like deal with this drummer and you know, just deal with the situation given the fact that they'll be performing in like a couple weeks. And so he shared with me when they realized that like the drummer, I think maybe there's something wrong with him. He probably got the shot, let's just be totally honest. So he's not operating on full cylinders. And so he told me that he addressed the whole orchestra and he said, I'm completely open to any creative ideas anyone has for other ways that we can keep tempo. And I was so super proud of him. I wish, like, I still want to have quantum languaging brownie badges. I want brownie badges for everything. So we can all have like our vintage girl and boy scout sashes and just have our patches for all the like cool things that we do. Like, why does that stop when we're kids? And why is it only relegated to like, you know, I learned how to tie this knot, or I pitched a tent, or, you know, I baked a brownie. Like, let's keep those going. But I was so proud of him as my friend for incorporating his quantum languaging tools. And instead of focusing on the problem and harping on the problem, He immediately turned to like, "Hey, here's the solution we're looking for. We need a way to keep the tempo," and then inviting the feedback, because we never know who's going to have the brilliant answer, right? Again, going back to evolving out of hierarchy. Okay, so it's the drummer's job and the drummer's not doing it. Okay, it's the conductor's job to like take care of the whole orchestra, and he didn't have the solution on hand. So why not ask everyone who's participating in the project to see, oh, maybe the clarinet player has a really clever idea. So I loved that he did it. I love that A, he leaned into the solution. It was all framed around the solution. And I love that he opened it up to everyone in the project instead of like tripping out on his own like hierarchical position or blaming the drummer from whom the solution wasn't necessarily obvious. And this goes back to actually what Emily and I were talking about on our latest Word Salad, and part of the reason why I'm done with politics and doing our shows the way we've been doing it is I know that no solutions are going to come for harping on the problem. I do think that there's value in getting it on the public record when there are lies, when there are manipulation, right? Because this censorship we're dealing with is unprecedented in my lifetime. And so knowing that none of our established news outlets are devoted to truth or are operating ethically, I do think there's still value in correcting the public record. And in terms of larger actual real deal change that serves the greatest good, that's only gonna come from putting ourselves in the solutions paradigm. And we were talking about this on my latest Saturday Salon, which PS has moved to Mondays. And I'm thinking of renaming it at this point, the 100% Responsibility Club. But for those who don't know, Saturday Salon has been going strong for 4.5 years. And it's my group coaching community. We meet once a week for 1 hour. The only requirements for participation, well, the only requirements are one, the willingness to take 100% responsibility for our experience of reality. Two is to show up with respect and encouragement for everyone else there, where we're all rooting for everyone to succeed. And if that feels aligned for you and you're curious about it, please do reach out to me. I'm happy to share information. But we were talking on our latest, as I said, it's not Saturdays anymore, it's Monday nights. But on our latest call about like, why is it so easy for the mind to go to problems or for the mind to go to the negative or the things that are wrong? Like, why does the neurology slant towards a negative bias, which it does, right? That's like established science for those who believe in the cult of science. I mean, it's scientism, right? I don't intend to demean science. Science is beautiful. But the brain does have a negative bias. I'm not clear if we're born with a negative bias or that's been, you know, indoctrinated upon us generation upon generation. I don't think it really matters. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you were inspired to check out the second half, wherein we go into all the quantum languaging, the language of betterarchy, please do join me on both my Patreon and Locals communities, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half shows, my post-show throwdowns, oodles of bonus content, plus the knowledge that you are supporting a content creator in keeping on with the keeping on. And by content creator, I mean yours truly. Sharing is caring. Caring is cool. It means the world to me that you value what I'm putting out so consistently. You can join me on Patreon and Locals. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com. and patreon.com/dannycats. I am also reminding you, as we are diving into the new school year, that I am offering the world's only pop propaganda media literacy digital course. It was created for teens, 14 and up. It is also super very appropriate for grownups. It's 11 modules, each featuring its own standalone video. And each one accompanied by a PDF with tons of examples and links. There are original animations and illustrations. I've gone the distance to make it super fun. And it is the very best way to safeguard our teens and ourselves from propaganda, misinformation, disinformation, fake news, groupthink, while at the same time cultivating critical thinking, confidence, and agency. You can learn more about it at poppropaganda.com. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch. That does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.